One. Mwahahahaha. We are back.
We don't. Did you say we are black or we are back?
I said back.
I don't. We're not black, guys. He's being racist.
How would that be being racist?
You're like trying to undermine the black community by calling two white boys who are extremely white black.
Whoa. Definitely not undermining. I don't want to do that.
You're undermining a black community.
We are whitest of whites.
Yes. Although sometimes I wish I was black because I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
I'd love to be able to rap.
Besides dealing with
the
racism and stuff, but
I mean, that would be shitty. Like, any racism is shitty no matter what, I guess, race you are. But welcome back, everyone.
Hi.
I'm Scott.
I'm Steven.
And we are Soul of a Gamer podcast. Every week we play a game. We get into a little detailed story of the making of the game, and we tell you how we thought the game went.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed our last week's game.
Super Mario World. Or bros.
Just stop. Bros. You're embarrassing yourself. That's my fault.
I made that mistake last time, too.
No, that's my fault, because I text you Super Mario World, and then... guys, I don't know. Remember if we said this on the last episode, but I text him, "Hey, I'm done with Super Mario World," but I meant Bros, and they're
so
two different
Super
games.
Mario World.
Yeah, they're two very different games.
And he was talking about how easy and how fast he beat it, and I was like, "What are you talking about? It took me like 4 hours." And he's like, "I don't think you." Oh,
no,
yeah, it was
you
really
said
dumb.
You said four. I assume you meant 4D.
I think I like.
Is World
like
that short?
4 to 6. I think it was like 4 to 6 hours that
I don't
played
know.
It. It
I
wasn't
don't
that
remember.
Bad.
I don't remember which one World is, so.
But yeah.
All right, well, yeah, we hope you enjoyed that. We had a lot of fun with that game, but this week we were playing a much, much newer game.
Yes, Baldur's Gate 3.
Baldur's Gate 3. And we are just going to jump right into this with our little story segment.
Well, before we get into that, we should talk about what we're playing this week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot we do that. All right.
So,
what are we?
What are we playing this week,
Steven? What are we playing? Just tell me.
So
he controls the fucking podcast, guys.
I am playing Cult of the Lamb.
Cult of the Lamb.
Yeah, it's an indie game that came out, I think, 1 or 2 years ago. You play as this lamb who these gods have been killing all the lambs because they didn't want this. Being like the devil, basically, to use lambs to be able to come back into the world. And so they're trying to kill all the lambs, but you're the last lamb alive, and the devil actually like saves your soul and brings you back to life. And he's like, "I'm gonna give you powers. You're gonna raise your own cult in my name, and you're gonna kill all the heretics to help free me."
That's pretty intense, I'm not gonna lie.
But it's done in like the cutesiest animation style you'll ever see.
Well, it's like Goat Simulator.
I honestly compare it to like a mix of Stardew Valley and Hades put together, because it's got like base building and farming, but in your cult area, and you actually have to like talk to your cult members and do quests for them and stuff like that. But then you go out on like a roguelike adventure.
Huh.
Every little bit.
That's fucking weird.
Gather supplies and stuff. It's
why do you pick the weird games?
Super cute. Dude, it's fun.
I assume you're playing a little bit of Smite, too.
Actually, I haven't touched Smite in about 2.5 months.
Oh, damn. You're weaning yourself off?
Well, no, Smite 2 got announced, and I pre-ordered it, and I'm just waiting for Smite 2.
Yeah,
honestly.
I know. I'm gonna probably... jump in the Smite 2 as well when that comes out, just because I want to give it a try, see if it sucks or not.
Yeah, well, in pre-ordering it, if you pre-order it, for every gem that you spent, or like you spent in the game, the in-game currency that you get or whatever, they're giving you double that amount of legacy gems for the sequel. So I've spent at least $1,200 in this game, so I'm getting like $2,400 worth of gems.
That's pretty cool. All right, well,
when the game comes out,
maybe I'll pre-order it. I haven't really decided yet what I'm gonna do with it, so
it's
just weird that they're putting pre-orders in when, you know, Smite was free.
No, I know. And Yeah, it is a little weird, but I mean, you could even pay for different editions of the first one still, too.
Really? Weird.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder when they're going to close those servers down, then.
They said they weren't going to, but a lot of the community said that they probably...
No one's going to be playing it. Yeah, so you might as well.
Well,
I've been playing Two Worlds.
Oh, really?
I jump back to that? I jump back in every once in a while. It's just, like, the worst game of all time, like, story-wise, but the RPG system in that game is so incredible that I can't get past it. Like, those guys did such a good fucking job on RPG systems. I just wish that they would have put some effort into their story and some of the graphics.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad game, but it still was entertaining.
Oh, dude. Like, when you actually start doing the magic and the alchemy and, like, all that stuff is actually fun. It's, like, way more fun than any other RPG that came out around that same time. So,
and one of the funnest ways to get an early victory.
Yeah, yeah, true. Like at two and a half minute, I think, is the...
Yeah, getting the townspeople to kill the bad guy.
Yep. Or you could just probably kill him slowly. I mean, you don't die in that game. You just respawn at a teleporter. And they don't recover their health.
That's very true.
Well, all right.
That's very true.
We're going to jump right into our next little segment here of talking about the making of the game.
Give it to us.
All right, so I just want to let you guys know right now that one of my favorite gaming companies, it used to be, now it's just a giant pile of crap. But back in the day, BioWare was like the coolest gaming company of all time. Okay?
It's fair.
BioWare actually made the first two Baldur's Gates.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize that either until I started getting into the research. I'm like, holy shit, BioWare did these? No wonder they're so fucking beloved. Because this is early. This is before EA bought BioWare. This is like, because I think EA got it in 2003 or 4 or something. But, you know, this is pre all of that. So this is actually a good game where they're not trying to make money through microtransactions or DLC or extra content or anything. So, and that was really cool to learn that because, you know, BioWare used to be a really cool company and now they're just a shell of what they used to be, unfortunately, because EA is a giant pit where they just want money.
Yeah.
That's why Star Wars is going downhill, too.
Yep. For sure.
Any Star Wars these companies are all EA.
The harder they fall. Like, it's so true. It's so bad because, like, the more money-hungry they get, the less they are actually in tune with the fans.
Yeah, there was a great... I read an amazing article. I think I mention it in here, but if I don't, I'll mention it now. The maker of Baldur's Gate 3 talks about how when he was first coming around with his studios, Larian Studios, he talked to a, publisher. So if you guys don't know how this stuff works, a developer develops a game and a publisher pays for the development of that game. And he talked to a publisher, and the publisher basically told him, like, why would we ever, like, we're making money off of other people's art. Like, that's all we care about is you have an artistic dream, and we have a bottomless pit in our wallet that we want to fill.
Yeah.
And they literally just admitted to the guy, like, we're going to steal your money. That's it. That's all we want from you is we can give two shits about your art. We want your money.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's amazing. And he said that during like an award ceremony where he's just talking about how the state of games is so crappy right now. And I really do like this owner of Larian Studios. He's on point. Yeah, he's on point with this crap. He knows.
Watch any interview, watch any game awards where he's gone up on stage. The way he talks about game in the game industry right now, it's hilarious.
And he's
how much
so...
he shits on microtransactions, especially.
Yep. Or how, like, he doesn't overdo things. Like, it's crazy. I'll talk about it more in the story, but there's some cool stuff that he does where you're like, I get why you're doing this. So let's just jump right into this. The first two Baldur's games were developed and released by BioWare. Makers of the Knights of the Old Republic, Dragon Age, Mass Effect. And, you know, we talked about how cool BioWare is. If you haven't played any of those games, you're out of your goddamn mind. play some good games, guys. The beginning of Baldur's Gate 3 started in 2006 or 2007. Obsidian, Which is even funnier because that's my second favorite gaming studio, which I think is fucking hilarious that they had their hands in this. Obsidian, makers of games like Fallout New Vegas and Knights of the Old Republic 2, as well as their original game, The Outer Worlds, had started talks about being interested in making Baldur's Gate 3. They had just had the Aliens. They had just made the Aliens RPG, or sorry, oh, I see what it is. They had just had the Aliens RPG canceled, so they had a ton of people ready to work on it. The CEO of Obsidian, I just want you to know that this CEO has the greatest name of all time.
Okay.
Fergus.
Oh, I have heard this actually.
Yeah, Fergus Urquhart.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's Fergus
Urquhart.
I love the name Fergus. That's a cool fucking name.
Right?
That is a sweet name.
Fergus. Fergus.
Yeah, it's like, it does sound like that, doesn't it? Like, Fergus. And he's really, what's crazy is him and the creator for, the founder of BioWare.
Yeah.
And the founder of Larian Studios are all like best friends.
Oh, nice.
That's so, like, awesome. I have to like Larian Studios. He likes all my favorite people.
Right.
The CEO of Fergus Urquhart, or Obsidian, Fergus Urquhart, was told by the owner of D&D, Atari. So Atari apparently at this point owned D&D, I think.
Oh, okay.
I didn't really look into this to see if it was like a thing, but I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Because remember, it's the second iteration of Atari, not the original.
Yeah.
Because Atari came back in the 90s as a different company, or someone bought out the Atari name, I think. That they had been interested in making Baldur's Gate 3. Fergus told them that they would need a real budget in order to make the game. Not $10 million, but more like $20 or $30 million. It took a little time, but eventually Atari agreed to the price tag, and Fergus started work on a contract and pitch for the game. Fergus says that he spent 80 to 100 hours and over 30 revisions just to get the pitch right and the contract solid.
Jesus.
Yeah, so literally he put all his time and effort. 100 hours is a long time just to spend on a contract.
Yeah, that's
They seemed ready to approve the contract, but Atari kept stalling. Atari was then sold to Namco Bandai, which, by the way, they knew the entire time. The entire time they were in talks for Obsidian to make this game, they knew they were going to sell the company. They were stalling because they didn't have the money to put like a $30 million game together. Yeah. So I think that's pretty shitty of Atari. So they were sold to Namco Bandai, and the deal they spent years making turned flat. Again, guys, that goes to show you, that's that fucking bullshit where publishers basically fuck over everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a publisher just screwing over Obsidian for wanting to make a game, putting man hours into making contracts and like spending money that they don't have just to get a game that they're never going to make.
Yeah.
That just sucks, dude. I hate that. After a while, a company called Beamdog, I don't know if you know this about Beamdog, but it's a company founded by the founder of BioWare, who left BioWare because EA sucks.
Okay.
Yeah. Which was responsible for the enhanced version of the first two Baldur's Gates, tried to make the game. Beamdog couldn't get it off the ground. After many years in limbo, Larian Studios, a Belgian company responsible for the Divinity series, approached Wizards of the Coast about making Baldur's Gate 3. They refused, thinking the time was wrong for the game. After a while, Wizards of the Coast actually approached Sven Winnicke.
Okay.
Who Sven is the founder of Larian Studios. Yeah. And asked if he was still interested in making the game. Sven was more than interested and agreed to start making the game. Sven is a man who does not like the current state of the gaming market. This is what I kind of touched on earlier. We'll read it again. Why not? Saying it is a black pit for developers because publishers are only interested in making money, not art.
Yep.
And he said that live on a game award when he won Game of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he's not afraid about sharing his opinion on this stuff.
He fucking hates publishers, and I do not blame him. Sven went into Baldur's Gate 3 not wanting to add any money from any publisher. He wanted to use the money he had made from releasing the Divinity Original Sin. The game was partly funded by a Kickstarter that earned almost $1 million and did very well. There's an entire web series about small things the company was up to while developing Baldur's Gate 3 that they made after they announced that they were working on the game in 2019. During its time in development, the game was released for beta launch in 2020 and was met with mixed reviews. Larian listened and changed several important things for the official release 3 years later. I don't know exactly what they changed. I played the original, the beta for this, and I remember it not being very good. I know, Steven, you said you had never played the beta.
Yeah. So I do know, like, first iterations of the game and stuff when it came out had no real ending. Like, as soon as you got to the end thing, the game just ended. Yeah. And they added a whole extra epilogue section afterwards.
Yeah.
That got added because, like, my brother had actually played this when it first came out. And he's like, yeah, the game's fun, but the ending kind of sucks. And I had a coworker said the same thing. And then when I finally played it, it was after they added the new ending. And I was talking to them about how amazing the ending was. And they were like, wait, I didn't have that. I didn't have
what
that.
Game
I didn't
did
have
you
that.
Play?
I didn't have that. Yeah, exactly. They're like, where did you get all? How did they add that recently? And so they actually both re-downloaded it and played it again.
Yeah,
to go through it.
I mean, and that's it. This studio seems really cool with those kinds of things. They're a studio that really listens to their fans. So when the beta test happened, they were like flabbergasted about how many people didn't really like it, and that had a 75% approval. Like, it wasn't bad. 75% is pretty fucking good, but they still felt like that was way too low.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game for the people,
sure. That's the attitude that every gaming company should be going in with. Like, that 75% is not 100. Let's get it up. Mm-hmm.
Well, they realized how horny a lot of the audience was, so they even added, like, extra kissing and extra sex scenes, and they added all this extra thing, so you, like, you
so
can
horny.
Go to... It's true. Everything I heard about this game when it was first brought up and when people first started playing is, like, you could fuck a bear. Oh my god, you could fuck a bear. Did you fuck the bear? Oh my god, you could fuck a bear. And I'm
know,
like, cool.
You know what's funny is the first person I heard you can fuck a bear from was your brother.
Yep. That's
so
right.
I know it's 100% true just because he said it. Back on this, sorry guys, that was a little tangent, but we know this game, it means a lot to a lot of people right now.
Oh, it is.
2020, Larian listed and listened and changed several important things for the official release 3 years later. I said that the choice actors in the game were carefully chosen and mo-capped while they were doing lines, so little things like the way they move go down a little bit here, the way they move their mouths to the twitches their heads might do while they talked were captured to give the feeling that the player was talking to a real person in the game. There were 248 voice actors in all for the game. Some of the things that were captured during mocap were the head wiggles that Jennifer English does as Shadowheart and the authoritative stances that Devorah Wilde does as Lazelle. The narrator was also a good choice for the game, Amelia Tyler. Had just lost her father while working on Baldur's Gate 3 as a narrator. She said that the time she spent on the game was a very good distraction while she dealt with her father's death in 2020. The lines that Amelia did took 3.5 years to record, and she did every line in 17 different styles in order to match the different options that the player had.
Wow.
Right?
That's incredible. Just hearing that is insane.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
They had so much cool
from
shit.
That, dude.
Yeah.
Like, damn.
Other voice actors for the game included Neil Newborn as Asterion, Theo Solomon as Will, Tim Downey as Gale, Samantha Bert as Karlak, Matthew Mercer as Minsk, Tracy Wiles as Jahira, Dave Jones as Howson. Took a break from the monkeys there, you know, for a little while. He's dead. I'm just joking. Davy Jones is dead. You probably don't know who Davy Jones is, but he's one of the monkeys. And Emma Gregory as Night Warden Minthara.
Okay.
And, you know, out of all those people.
J.K. Simmons in there, too.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons was in there. I think I forgot to put him in on this list.
Yeah,
he was a minor character, right? He wasn't someone.
No, he was the champion of Merkel's. I can't remember his name. The first guy you have to fight in the Shadow Realm. The one who turns into Merkel.
Merkel?
the god of death and bones or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know what? I do remember reading that, and I probably just forgot to put this in because there was so much shit about the voice actors in there.
There's way too many voice actors to say them all, but I just wanted to point that one out, too, because he was especially good. Yeah, and
J.K. Simmons is one of our favorite actors. He's amazing. Yes. If you guys don't know, he's in every Spider-Man, he's James Jonah Jameson. There we go. Every single Spider-Man, though, doesn't matter which one you watch. Yep. It's always him. He's a very good fucking Jameson.
Yes, he is. He's the best.
The game was released in August 2023 for Windows, and more releases for more platforms came soon after that one. The reviews for the game have been overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah.
Except...
Uh-oh.
Except for one that I found written by Jita Jackson from the website Polygon. Jita claims that the... okay, here we go. Jita claims that the blame does not lie with the developers or the game itself. It lies with the fact that the tabletop game it is based on. She doesn't like D&D. Yep. Dungeons & Dragons is the problem. The game is tedious and unfun when put into video game format, the author claims. The author then goes on to complain about having to save before big battles and reload several times at the first sign of trouble.
You don't have to do that. You can accept the consequences of your actions.
Or, I mean, you can understand that every single fucking RPG that anyone has fucking played in anyone's life has always been a save before a big battle thing.
Yes.
That's not a D&D thing. That's an RPG thing, you dumb bitch.
And God with more and more people getting into emulators, that's just a more and more thing that everyone's doing all the time.
It was such a weird complaint. The reviewer goes on to mention several other games she thinks does the D&D thing better and complains about how dice rolls are basically stupid. She does end up relenting eventually and saying she will play the game for years to come, which I don't... Yeah, I don't.
I hate like, this game. I read this is stupid. Yeah, but I love it. I'll
the
play
entire
it every
review,
day for 3 years.
Like, and she complained that the tabletop game probably has better circumstances because of the randomness you get out of it. And of course, when you're playing with a bunch of your buddies, making jokes or like talking like in your character that you made up, that you made for a certain situation, like of course that's going to be better. Of course, because you have full control over that situation. This is a video game.
Yes, the narrator's not going to just become a spiteful DM all of a sudden and just be like, you know, I'm tired of the way you're playing this game. I'm going to fuck you.
Well, basically, that's what she was saying the entire game was doing. Like, the game was built to fuck the player. I'm like, I don't know. This whole review, it just felt so weird to read. And it was the only bad one I could find. It was the only one. It's the only reason I put it in here.
Sounds like the kind of reviewer that'd be like, Dark Souls sucks because it's a difficult game.
Yeah, like literally. It was just really funny too. She talks about her boyfriend or something. I'm like, stop trying to prove you have a boyfriend. You're single. You know you are. It's like every guy who does it, like, meet my girlfriend over in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
it's
yeah, she exists.
My God, it was so hard to read that review, but it was so funny at the end when she's like, I'm probably gonna play it for years, and I'm like, what are you? You just spent
you can't give a negative review and then say you'll play it for years.
Yeah,
you
I
can't.
Know. It's so strange. I think she was just trying to like save face because everyone loves the game so much.
That's fair.
So it was just a really weird review, and I had to include it in here because it was funny.
That's fair.
Okay, so here we go. After many months of doing amazing, the Game Awards for the year came. Baldur's Gate ended up winning the 2023 Game of the Year, Best Community Support, Best RPG, Best Multiplayer Game, the Player Choice Award, and Newbon won Best Performance. The game was also nominated for Best Game Direction, Best Narrative, and Best Score/Music.
Yeah, so many awards.
Yep.
So many awards.
Yep, and that's what I have for the game history, guys.
All right. Well, that was a lot of interesting history, actually.
Yeah, I like that was kind of a fun one to research because there was so much like fun things about it, and not as much and we had to program it with this engine, and we had to do this, and we had to do that. I will tell you guys that it is programmed with the Divinity engine that they use for all the Divinity games, at least the most recent ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not Unreal or anything like that.
Yeah. It's still a great engine, though.
Yeah. Awesome. They did a great job with it.
So yeah, right. Next we'll get into the best and the worst. This is going to be the best parts of the game and the worst parts of the game that we enjoyed, without giving too many spoilers away.
Yep.
Just kind of the things that'll make or break purchasing this game for you. So first off, I'm going to just say the amount of freedom you have to solve any encounter in almost any way you can think of in the game just rewards creativity in the most expressive and amazing way I've ever seen in the video game.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's just the best by far, but...
Well, I mean, as far as, like, I haven't played every game or anything, but this, for me, is one of the most refreshing games of, like, oh, you could do this encounter this style or this style or this style, or, you know, if you just want to, like, plant a bunch of bombs around someone while you're invisible and then blow them up, you could do that, too. Like,
you know what's funny is you could even do that while you're visible. So.
On some people, yeah.
Yeah.
There's just so much crazy stuff that you can do in this game, and like the more and more you watch or the more and more you experiment, the more you're rewarded. And like even different cutscenes, you'll get different interactions you'll get for every different way you do things. It's just insane. It's awesome.
I mean, the best part of this game for me is just the options for classing, multi-classing, building your characters. Like, it's so cool not being restricted to one person.
True.
Like, it's so awesome, like, being able to make a rogue, but also being able to make a ranger, but also being able to make a cleric, but also wizard, but also, like, every single character, and you get to experience all of them, and you can revamp them at any point in the game, which I thought was cool.
Well, and I love that, too. You get the freedom to revamp all the story companions you want, anyway.
Yep.
In any form you want, as well. And just even, like, with that, just the amount of, like, variety you have with all the characters, and like you can play as a story character and you have an entire story that's interwoven into the grand scheme of the story. There's a Dark Urge character that has its own story that's intertwined with the story as well. And then you can create your own if you want to do something completely different. Like, it's very variety, and it's great for people who are very creative and great for people who just want to jump in and like, I think Asterion's hot. I want to play as him.
Yeah. Or like if you're new to D&D, it's a great way to learn all the rules and such, because they do follow the rules fairly well, even though they're not 100%.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
It's fairly close. My worst for this, and it's a hard worst, okay?
Okay.
This is a weird one, and I'm going to say it, and there might be disagreements out there with it. I kind of wish the dice rolls for the attacks were shown.
That's fair.
I know you can see, like, they have a little thing where they show you what your dice number was. If you pull it up, you can see the log for it.
Yeah.
But I want it to happen on screen. I don't know why.
I think that would have taken a lot more
time. Yeah, and that's the bad part about that is I know it's going to take more time.
Yeah.
And I know it's going to be annoying. But for some reason, I still want it.
I never felt like I was missing anything without having it, but I can see your point.
It's the weirdest thing because I still want it because I just want to be able to complain, like, how did I roll a one?
Like, seriously.
But like, it's hard because you can't really see your rolls unless you have that little dialogue box up where it shows every roll you do. And I don't know. It'd just be cool to see the rolls.
That's fair. For me, one of my worst, and this one might also be a little bit, some people are going to agree with it, some people aren't. This game's got a high learning curve, especially with the freedom of creativity. Like, you don't have this level of creativity in a lot of games, so unless you, like, know to experiment, you might not experiment as much. And if you're very new to this, like, it took me a few hours to really get into this game.
Yeah,
like I was enjoying it, and I love D&D, and I love all that stuff. But it probably took me like 4 hours to understand all the mechanics fully, and to finally like start experimenting really heavily, and start like, oh my god, this is actually like a lot of fun when I'm actually getting into it. But I will say, just the learning curve of it, just because the amount of things you can do, like, I mean, the amount of actions that you can do in a turn, like when you're looking at all your like weapon wheels and all the different things that you could do, it's you have like 100 different actions you can choose sometimes.
Yep.
It can be a lot.
It can be a little overwhelming especially for people who aren't into hardcore RPGs. Like, if you've never played Oblivion, if you played Oblivion and you didn't like it, you probably won't like this.
Yeah.
Because Oblivion's like that, not hardcore, but harder, mm-hmm. and not nearly as bad as this can be sometimes.
Another great thing for me, this is probably the best way to get your D&D fix if you don't have a group to play with.
Yeah. Like, or you could find, honestly, people online to play with you in the game. So,
yeah.
They probably have whole chat rooms where you can meet some really weird people and some really great people, I bet. So.
Yeah, and the option to do this multiplayer, so like your D&D party could actually just form their own D&D party in Baldur's Gate and yeah, play yeah. all together.
Yeah, it would be cool.
The other thing, it's kind of a good and bad thing for me. I want to do everything in this game, which is good, but it's bad because there's so much and it takes so long to do everything. Guys,
I haven't beaten it yet. I'm at, I think, 110 hours into the game, 120.
Crazy.
I've literally just been talking to people nonstop, trying to figure out what I can do. What's this quest like? What's that quest like? This game is so intense with the amount of time you can end up in it.
So. Yes, which if you're kind of streamlining it, I finished my first playthrough in about 70 hours.
Yeah, if you don't want to do everything, you can definitely be fine. And, you know, a lot of people who play RPGs, that's kind of the way you do it the first time. You play with as much as you can understand, and then you go back later.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a big negative, though, with games nowadays. You know, we're all adults. We're all busy. We're all jobs and kids and bullshit. So it can be a little bit daunting to take on such a big game.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Yeah, besides that, though, the other thing is I just love the characters.
Yeah.
And I love how much everyone shows attachment to these characters. Yeah. Like, everyone has their specific character that they fell in love with.
Everyone loves Shadowheart. You know it's universal.
Actually, it's not.
Everybody loves... I don't care what everybody says. Everybody loves Shadowheart.
Everyone should love
Shadowheart. Her dark and brooding took me in, and then her loving embrace kept me going.
Like, one of the first reviews I ever listened to about the... game, because it was right after I played the game, and Shadowheart was bae for me, and I fell in love with her, and our characters were in love throughout the entire playthrough. And I was listening to this review, and they were just shitting so hard in Shadowheart, and they're like, Shadowheart's really sassy, she's kind of a bitch, she's kind of this, she's kind of that. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's the most kind-hearted, loving individual I've ever talked to.
You know what's funny is that the glass was broken for you. If you guys don't know this about us, but we love How I Met Your Mother.
Yes.
And there's a whole episode where Ted's dating this girl, but doesn't see that she talks too much.
Yes. Blah, blah.
Yeah. No, not blah, blah. Blah, blah was the one who is, like, crazy.
Blah, blah was the one who talked too much.
No. Blah,
they
blah.
They didn't remember her name, so they called her blah, blah.
So, blah, blah was the one he told that that he kissed Lily... to, who is a different person. In a later episode, he starts dating this girl. I think her name's like Trish, or starts with a T or something. Patricia or Patty, I can't remember. But she talks incessantly, and they don't want to tell Ted because it'll break the glass for him, and then he'll realize and not be able to not notice it.
Yeah, because then they had Marshall got his glass broken with how loud Lily chews.
Yep, and then Robin got hers broken by Ted correcting her, and so on and so forth. But that's what it is. It's like you only see what you want to see, and then someone says that, and you're like, no!
Well, the other thing was, as somebody else pointed out in that interview, or that review, that they're like, if you're in agreement with everything that Shadowheart agrees with, she's super nice to you and super loving to you. Yeah. But if you disagree with anything, she's a bitch.
Yeah, yeah,
and I didn't disagree with anything she said. So yeah, that's why I love her.
When she told me to kill those orphans, I was all for it. I was laughing as I slit their throats. That's all it was.
She did not do that. But yeah, that's pretty much all the best and worst things without getting too much into the game, I think.
Okay, let's move on to our next little segment.
All right, so next we're going to go achievements. I can't speak. Achievements, badges, and trophies.
All right, what achievements, badges, and trophies are even in this game? As someone who played on Steam, I don't pay attention to them.
So there's lots of really fun ones. I'll start with just some of the fun ones. There's bottoms up. Long rested, only using alcohol, is a time-honored dwarvish tradition.
Yep, I did that one. I didn't know that.
I accidentally did that one time.
I was like, I have too much alcohol, but not enough food. Yep. I'm just going to use all my alcohol right now.
And then it's funny how, like, you're stumbling around. Like, yep.
You're drunk the next day for, like, 9 rounds or something.
Yeah, which rolls into my next achievement that's really fun, called Bunch Drunk. And it's defeat 20 opponents while drunk. Down them. there's a no penny required. Successfully use detect thoughts to pry into someone's thoughts, which is really funny because in D&D you use detect thoughts in D&D you need to have a penny, which is a play on penny for your thoughts.
Yeah,
I recently watched a TikTok video where someone was going into the requirements, the spell requirements for all the spells, and they're all puns.
Yep.
Everything in D&D is based off of a pun. I was like, are you serious?
It's funny because a lot of people don't use components because they're spell focusers, which take away the component result if you have a spell focus. No. So.
There's a Jack of all trades, which is one of the craziest ones for me. Multi-class into every class in one playthrough without asking Withers to change your character. So you have to be committed to this from the start of the game all the way to the end.
Yep, and you'd have to really balance your ability modifiers because you have to have certain levels of abilities in order to multi-class.
Yep.
So I think So you'd literally have to have everyone at 13, wouldn't you? Because I think 13's the low ball for every single one to multiclass into the next one.
Maybe. I can't remember.
I think it is. Oh, that would suck.
But yeah, it's. I think someone said that you could do it with a hireling as well. Like you could hire a hireling and multiclass them that same way and get that achievement still. Another one, this one's a really cute one. You have two hands for a reason. It's for for petting Scratch and the Owlbear Cub at the same time.
Nice.
It's the greatest joy an adventurer could ask for.
It is.
There's a Foe Hammer, which is completing the game on Honor Mode. This is one of the most difficult achievements. This is actually on Xbox. It's only been done by 0.64% of players.
I know one of them.
We do. Our buddy Zach.
Yep.
And then last but not least, I will say that to get all the achievements in this game, it takes roughly around 159 hours to get a full completion.
Yeah, I would not want to. Yeah. So, to me, achievements just aren't fun anymore. I'll do them when they're fun, but if they're not, I won't do them.
This one's a fun one to get the achievements in if you're really enjoying the game.
Yeah, if you want to go back in the game and achievement hunt it, but it does require a lot of work to get the achievements.
Yes. Well, and there's people that end up doing like 3 or 4 playthroughs to get all the achievements. Yep. It's a lot. So, I guess we'll go right on to the next section then, the hunt for all the eggs. All
right, let's hear them.
So this one game, they made a lot of fun things. I'm just going to name a few. One of my favorite ones is actually in Baldur's Gate. It's a cabbage vendor. His name is Geezer Loris.
Oh, I did see this. I was as soon as I saw it, I knew exactly what he was. I'm like, no fucking way they did this, did they?
My cabbages! Yeah.
It was pretty. I haven't told Lana yet. Lana loves Avatar. I need to let her know that the cabbage vendor makes his way into the game.
So yes, he's complaining the entire time about people causing him trouble, and apparently, and I haven't done this because I didn't have a monk in my party. But he acts harsher towards characters that are monks in the game.
No, really?
Because of Aang being a monk.
You know what's funny is, I think it would have been really cool. I don't think they did this. I think he's only in Baldur's Gate, so Act 3.
Yeah.
But they should have put him in every act, because that would have been really
funny.
That would have been hilarious. Yeah. If he was literally just all over the place, you're like, always with his cart knocked over, always with cabbages just like smashed on the ground somehow.
And it'd be funny if there was like a story thing that happened where you ended up destroying his cabbages.
Oh, it'd be so great if he was the final boss.
God.
Cabbage God or something like that. That'd be hilarious. Make a DLC, Larry, and I know you don't want to, but please make a DLC.
Seriously, that'd be awesome. Companions, there are several people from the first two games that actually reappear. Jahira is in both 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Minsk is also another one. Savrok, who was in the story but later became a playable character in later expansions in Baldur's Gate 2, I believe. He's also in this one.
Yep.
And then Viconia Devere from Baldur's Gate 2 also appears in Shadowheart's storyline.
Nice.
So, yeah, I think there's like four or five different characters, and there's a lot of mentions of characters from the older games, too. Yeah,
and they really did not have to do that. They didn't make the first two games. They could have just said, okay, all those characters are dead, and they're not coming back. But you know what? They were cool. They decided to do it.
And they even, like, redid a lot of the lines that a lot of the characters that you do play as, like, a couple of Asterion's lines and Lizelle's lines, I think, were lines that, or Jahir's lines, especially, were lines from the first two games as well.
Yeah, I wonder how the makers of the games, like the original developers, just felt about Jahira getting that kind of treatment where, you know, she becomes a more living thing. Because, you know, the original two games, there's no speech. It's all, I think, text-to-talk.
Oh, okay.
So there's no, like, voice acting. There's none of that crap. So I'm just curious if that's a thing. I don't think there was any speech in there. I'm pretty sure there was just...
I don't remember. I haven't played the first two, honestly.
I played a little bit of the first one, but it's not very good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good, but it's not, like...
It's not this.
If I had played it when it first came out, I bet I would love it.
True. dialogue prompt comes up in Undertale when a player looks in a mirror that says, "Despite everything, it's still you." And in Baldur's Gate 3, when you look into a mirror, it says, "Still me, despite everything."
Yeah.
A little homage to Undertale. So I thought that was kind of fun.
You can tell that the guy, Swen, really likes video games. So he picks his favorite ones on just like...
Like, just throws a little sprinkle of them in the game. Yeah, it's so fun, honestly.
That is so cool.
There's someone said this. This isn't an official one, but someone said that they found Scanlan Shortgrass, a gnome dressed in all the same things that Scanlan's dressed as in the game.
If you guys don't know, Scanlan is from what is the name of the troop? I can't remember now. Critical Role.
Yeah, it's Critical Role.
Yeah, I can't remember
which one it was from, the Mighty Nine or Vox Machina.
It's Vox Machina. Yeah, it's Vox Machina. I just couldn't remember the name of the thing they do. It's Critical Role.
True. If you're a fan of World of Warcraft, the Doomhammer of Orgrim makes an appearance in this game as a weapon. There's a vendor named Grat at the Goblin Camp. I believe that's where he's at. The hammer has an effect called Edge of Terror, which has actually the same effect as Bone Chill and applies two turns worth.
Nice.
And then one of my favorite Easter eggs in this game is the Necronomicon from the Evil Dead franchise appears in this game. And it's in a very hidden room in the Blighted Village, and you have to do all these steps to obtain it, and then even more to open it and read it. You will need to open it, you will need the Dark Amethyst, which is located in the bottom of a spider's den. And to read it, you will need to succeed on wisdom checks that get progressively harder to fulfill or get cursed. But you will get permanent buffs to your character if you are able to succeed.
That's sweet.
And you can read from the book three different pages, and then you can read it once more in Act 3, and you get a permanent special necromancy spell if you read it all the way through.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was like, that's so sweet, actually. Cool.
Nice job, guys.
God, and you. Yeah. but yeah, that's all I have for Easter eggs. There's tons more, trust me. There's lots of secrets in this game. I didn't want to divulge a lot of secrets because part of the thrill and love of this game is finding a lot of those secrets yourself.
Yeah. We probably should have done this a little earlier. We did decide we were going to add this in here, too. Basically... Is the game worth playing after a few hours? This one's a hard one. We kind of mentioned it. There's a big learning curve to jumping into this game.
Yeah.
Like, you'll know if you like it within the first 5 hours, but 5 hours is a long time to spend in if you're not going to continue.
Yeah, exactly.
So I will say, like, this game kind of fails the two-hour test. Like, if we had to say... Is the game worth playing after playing for 2 hours? I would say no.
Yeah, unless you're like a big D&D person and you know that you're going to end up enjoying it later. Like, it's hard to get through the first section of this.
And it's not for like any lack of story, any lack of... No. It's just the mechanics are so incredibly...
vast.
Yeah. There's so much of it that it's hard to grasp it when you first start playing. And the two-hour test is basically saying, like, can this game capture your attention in 2 hours? And it might be able to, but I have to give it a no just because of how complicated it can be in the first 5 hours.
And it is pretty difficult right at the beginning because you are just level one. And it's, especially if you don't, like, find the party members right away, especially two, because you don't... Finding the party members is optional in this game. You can go through without finding most of the party members. It's actually kind of ridiculous. So, like, the more you're trying to go through this, like, as a solo party member when the game is designed to have a party of four, that also can make your gameplay harder at the beginning.
They should make a mode in this, and they should call it the Kirito mode.
Solo it.
Yep, you're a beater. That's all you're doing.
So there is a bunch of people who have been doing that, actually. They've been trying to solo it on Honor.
I doubt they're calling it the Kirito mode.
They probably not. Well, they should. They should.
They definitely should. Or beater mode, Peter. Either way.
Yeah, beater. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to go to our last review then.
Let's jump into it. What do you think this game is worth on a scale of 1 to 5?
So before I give my score, I must confess something tragic. When this game was up for Game of the Year, and even after it won, had said...
This little piece of shit. This little piece of shit mouth.
I had said that Spider-Man 2 should have been Game of the Year to, like, everyone I know.
Yeah, me especially a lot.
I thought hard about how amazing Spider-Man 2 was and why it deserved it. I was naive and ignorant and one of the most epic... I was naive and ignorant to one of the most epic games to ever grace this planet. I hope the fact that I hadn't played this game yet makes up for my totally false claims of Spider-Man 2 being a better game, or even thinking that Tears of the Kingdom had a chance for the title. I now know that Baldur's Gate 3 is hands down one of my top three favorite games of all time, and I give this 5 pure souls of the highest rating for a game that I recommend to anyone who loves D&D or any other tabletop RPG games.
I made him write that, guys. I didn't make him write that.
I surprised him with this.
It is really funny. I was going to bring it up and I kind of forgot. But yeah, we had talked about this previously about, because neither of us had played the game. Neither of us had played. I hadn't played Spider-Man. So I kept saying just, you know, I don't have if you say it's better, I guess it's better. I have no clue because I haven't played either game. So, but, you know, knowing what we know now, I agree. I think 5 souls is an amazing rating for this game. And it's the only rating that I could possibly give.
Yeah.
There's no. Sure. It does fail the 2-hour test. Of course it does, because it's so fucking vast. And the 2-hour test is not meant to say that the game is bad. It's meant to say if it's worth your time.
Well, and the thing that sucks with this too is, like, the 2-hour test in a game that's 10 hours long or 20 hours long means a lot more than a 2-hour test a game that can take you 120 hours.
Yeah. So I read, I think, somewhere that the max amount of time it would take to do complete everything in the game, to do everything, is 205 hours.
Yeah.
So this game is potentially 205 hours, and a 2-hour test for that is 1% of the game.
Yes. So judging it off of 1% of the game isn't the fairest comparison. Yeah,
but it is something that a lot of people do for a lot of games. 2 hours is a good amount of time to spend in, whether you're gonna know whether you like it or not after 2 hours.
Well, and when you spend $70 on a game and you're not enjoying it for the first 2 to 4 hours of the game, that does suck.
It's
terrible. It's demeaning. It hurts you. You're like, God, why did I waste my money on this? But if you can push through it, if you can get past that, if you can find a way to enjoy the little things in this game, or, like, do a bunch of research and research, like, builds or different things you want to do in the game beforehand, you will find so much more enjoyment in this game, and you will end up loving it. Yeah, almost guaranteed.
Guys, I can tell you right now, I'm a big RPG fan. That is, like, 90% of the games I play are RPGs. That is my shit. I do it all the fucking time. It is my favorite game style to play. I do everything in every RPG that I play. And generally, I know if I like an RPG in the first 10 hours I play it.
Yeah.
Okay? This was really hard for me to get through the first 5 hours.
Yeah.
This was like, it was just a lot to learn. I had to relearn everything about D&D going into it because they don't exactly match what D&D is. Some mm-hmm. of the things are a tiny bit different. They don't add all the classes that you might want to play as. So it can be rough to jump in here. Trust me, give it the 5 hours, play the fucking game. You're going to have so much fun playing it.
100%.
Yeah. So yeah, that's our ratings. 5 souls across the board. This is our first 5 soul game.
Yes, it is.
Hopefully it's not the last.
Definitely not.
Well, you never know.
This one's 5 pure souls in my heart, though. Yeah, this all is right. The,
there's
the
no
highest
pure,
of those
there's
5.
No pure souls. It's either 1 or 5 or somewhere in between. There's no pures. It's not worth double if it's a pure soul.
No, but it just makes it sound a little bit better.
It does sound like you're trying to start a cult and try to make people into pure souls.
Cults.
Cult. I got a little story for you guys if you want to hear it really fast.
Ooh, let's go.
So, just so you know, I live in Colorado, and there's a church somewhere near me who I think it might be a fucking cult.
Oh.
And it's because they send people to my gas station that I go to get gas, because that, you know, that's what a gas station's for, to get gas or a drink or something. Mm-hmm. And they send these little, like, young women, like teenagers, basically, and they have driven up to me 3 separate times. And the first time I was super nice and said, hey, you know, I'm not interested in your church. The second time I'm like, you guys seriously again? And this last time was a couple days ago and I said, go fuck yourselves and get the fuck away from me. If you come to this gas station again, I'm going to file a fucking police complaint. Because, dude, it's getting ridiculous. So I'm pretty sure there's a cult near me because I don't think you send young, like, teenage women out often to pull up young guys to come to your fucking church. That's fucking weird.
That is a little weird.
Yeah. So, watch out for cults, guys. It's real.
They're real. They are. And actually, that's the terrifying part. The more I've, like, listened to podcasts and stuff about cults, I'm like, this is still happening?
Yep.
How is this still happening?
It is crazy. All right. Well, that was the game, guys. We will announce the game on the website or on social medias for our next game. We don't really – we have an idea of what we want, but we haven't 100% decided. So we will get that announced later this week whenever we release this, which I believe is on Mondays. So just stay tuned and you will know what we're playing next.
Sounds good. All right. Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.
Love you.
No.